August 20th, 2024, City Council meeting.
And we're live. All right, we're live, everyone. Gentlemen, we'll get started. Good evening, everyone. We're going to start tonight's City Council meeting. I ask that we all rise to the pledge of flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Bubba, ask you to call the roll, please.
Mr. Callahan?
Present.
Ms. Francie Smith?
Present.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Present.
Ms. Laird?
Present.
Ms. Neal?
Present.
Ms. Woolham?
Present.
Mr. Quinn?
Present. Thank you. So as you see, we have four of us in person this evening, and then three council members will be joining us remotely for various reasons. When we get to discussion, I will try to make sure I'm looking at the monitors, but to council who's participating remotely, if you are trying to participate and I'm not seeing, don't be afraid to politely interject. So I don't want to overlook anyone trying to participate in any discussion. Moving on to the approval of the minutes for the August 6, 2024 meeting. Any discussion on the minutes from August 6?
President Colon, I have a concern with the minutes.
Yes, Councilwoman Cranston.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I have a concern with the discrepancies on page 9 and 10 of the minutes. And I note that I don't believe these are indicative at all of erroneous meeting documentation by our clerks. Rather, on page 10, I need to note that Councilwoman Wilhelm inappropriately makes the assumption that I question Councilwoman Leon's fitness for the spot on the Housing Authority and the need for the Housing Authority reform. Page 9 notes in my remarks that this is never mentioned, thus my confusion and concern. On page 10, Councilwoman Kwiatek inappropriately indicates that I made insinuations and accusations against Councilwoman Leon as a resident and council member, and falsely states I insinuate that Councilwoman Leon would shunt money to her and her family on the Housing Authority. Again, that is nowhere to be found on my statements on page 9, and thus is totally fabricated, false, and leads to my further confusion. Even more horrific is Councilwoman Kwiatek's statement on page 9 that my insinuations are microaggressions. May I advise, the definition of microaggression is a comment that expresses a prejudiced attitude toward a member of a marginalized group. Apparently, Councilwoman Kwiatek doesn't know what I've done for the past 40-plus years, professionally and personally. Again, nowhere on page 9 in my statements is this noted. While I usually do not move to address issues such as these upon meeting the minutes, I was so appalled and confused by the discrepancies, as well as highly insulted, that I felt the need to address this issue. There is no need for revision of the minutes. However, there was a need for me to clarify the harsh and serious discrepancies. Thank you very much.
Councilwoman, can you hear me? Can everyone hear me? Remotely?
Yes.
Okay, understood. And then, Councilwoman Cramsey Smith, I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything. So you're just, those were remarks for clarification at this time? Is that correct?
Absolutely. As I said, I don't think there was any erroneous documentation in the minutes by the clerks. I think it was just, pretty harsh and severe misappropriations in the minutes by other council people. So I just felt the need to clarify that.
Understood.
Thank you.
Any other comments regarding the minutes from the August 6, 2024 meeting?
Mr. Colon?
Who was that?
Kwiatek.
No. Councilwoman Kwiatek?
Yes, I just want to reassure Ms. Cramsey Smith that those remarks were not intended or directed toward her, that the only comment that I made that was regarding her comments was to just say that it was my opinion that it wasn't bad government to make the decision that I was making in terms of my vote. So I hope that she will accept this explanation in the spirit in which it is given. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman Kubitschek. Any other comments on the minutes?
Yeah.
Councilwoman Wilhelm?
I actually don't, I don't see the comments that Ms. Crancy Smith is referring to, but I want to invite a conversation offline. Ms. Smith, if you want to chat about what you heard and how I can clarify for you my intention.
President Colonna, thank you, and I would certainly welcome conversation, and I will just reference you to page 10 of the minutes, because I think it's very clear in page 10 of the minutes what was stated, but I would certainly welcome a conversation at any time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion or comments regarding the minutes from the August 6th meeting? Seeing no more comments, the minutes for August 6th stand approved.
I think you need a motion to status.
Moving on to public comment. So our first public comment, as is typical, will be on anything not being voted on this evening. And we have seven people signed up in advance. So as is typical, I'll go around the room. I ask everyone to respect our 5-minute time limit. And then once we go through our list of who signed up, I will go around the room and open it up to comment. So I'll start with Mr. Robert Virgilio. And if you don't mind stating your name for the record for our city clerk.
Robert Virgilio, resident of Bethlehem for 37 years. First of all, President, I'd like to thank the council, and I'd like to thank the police department, and I'd like to thank the mayor for posting a crime report, a daily crime report on Facebook. It's well done. I have a couple questions, so maybe you can just shoot me an email, let me know who I should ask the questions from. Okay, secondly, the city on the crime report from the state police, it's fairly good this past month. The only thing that was up were the simple assaults. Everything else seemed to be in line, so that's a good sign. I give the city credit on that. Now, a little off the topic, I went to a website, Government Salaries, and I was curious. And we have a mayor's position, I found out, that is somewhere in the range, and correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere in the range of $60,000 a year. And we have a number of city employees that are way higher than that. And I just want to point out that I've never seen a private company operate where the CEO is paid way less than the people who are working for the company. So I encourage City Council to maybe look at that for the next budget and bring Bethlehem into the 21st century and pay our mayor for the job that's required in running a city that has hundreds of employees, and maybe consider raising that level of salary. Second to that, I'd like to recommend for the time that you people put on City Council, which is amazing that you're willing to give that time, because that's pretty much what you're doing at $7,000 a year for all of the meetings you have. Maybe you want to look at the formula where you look at how many hours you put in and come up with some sort of increase for City Council. I think all this would do the city serve it well in the future and presently. Lastly, I'll give you the crime report, and I have attached to it a memo for something that I do not want to discuss at the podium here, but it's going to bring you up to date on the situation that is in our center city. And I'll leave it at that. I'll give this to you, Mr. President, and you can pass it out to your people that are here and those that aren't here. Thank you.
I welcome it, Mr. Virgilio, and we'll make sure the clerk's able to get it to those who are not in attendance. while you're passing that out, just a couple things.
I'll just hand it to you.
I'll take care of it. Thanks, sir. I'm not familiar with the website you referenced, but all city salaries are in our budget. There are itemized line items. I believe the mayor's salary is $90,500. I'm going by
way above what the website.
I'm going by memory.
It's 95,000. It's still less than.
And then so.
Well, they've still got a few people that are way higher than that.
Yeah,
sure. I'm sure Mayor Reynolds appreciates those remarks. And then also, just a reminder to everyone who is here this evening, if you're not accustomed to a city council meeting, during the 5 minutes, we're here to listen. If there's something I can clarify, I'll try to. Our city department heads are here from the Law Bureau, Community Economic Development, Public Works, Police, Water, and Fire. So if it's not something that council can answer, I may refer you to the appropriate department head that handles the day-to-day city business. Our next speaker signed up this evening, Joe Daniels.
Hello, everyone.
Good evening.
I am going to probably be speaking quickly again because I'm going to be reading directly from something. So, we the residents and supporters of Bethlehem urgently call on our city leaders to take action in addressing critical issues that are threatening the future of our community. We demand immediate steps to be taken to ensure that development in our city is equitable, sustainable, and respectful of both current and future residents. We'd like to do this by implementing a minimum 6-month moratorium on new housing developments without a 50% affordability within their units. The rapid pace of new developments is creating significant challenges, particularly for long-term residents. We're requesting a 6-month moratorium on all new housing developments that do not already have approval and that do not designate at least 50% of their inventory as affordable housing. The reasons are for gentrification. Unchecked development is driving up property values and rents, displacing long-time residents and altering the character of our neighborhoods. Affordable housing is crucial to ensure that Bethel remains a city for everyone and not just the wealthy. Poor infrastructure. Our current infrastructure, particularly roadways, is struggling to keep up with the rapid increase in population. Traffic congestion, inadequate public transportation, deteriorating roads are just a few of the issues that need to be addressed before any further development can responsibly be pursued. Safety concerns. The safety of our residents is paramount. With the population increase, we must assess whether we have enough emergency responders to ensure the safety and well-being of our community. The environmental impact. We must consider environmental impact of new developments. Are these buildings meeting LEED certification standards? If not, they are contributing up to unsustainable practices that could harm Bethlehem's environment for generations to come. Zoning law changes. Recent changes to zoning laws have facilitated developments that do not align with the community's vision for Bethlehem. These changes need to be revisited to ensure they serve the best interests of all residents. Unsustainable growth. The current pace of development is unsustainable. We need to pause and plan for growth that is balanced, considering long-term impacts on our community, infrastructure, and environment. So again, we would like to ask that the city impose a 6-month moratorium on all new housing developments that do not allocate at least 50% of their units as affordable housing. This pause will allow the city to conduct a thorough review and plan for growth that benefits all residents. Second item, establishment of a permanent moratorium on Lehigh University off-campus housing outside of the current student overlay. Lehigh is a very important part of Bethlehem, but the expansion of off-campus housing into residential neighborhoods is causing serious issues for local homeowners. We call for permanent moratorium on any new Lehigh University off-campus housing outside of the designated student overlay for the following reasons. Harassment of owners. Developers are aggressively targeting homeowners in an attempt to buy their properties for student housing. This harassment is unethical and it disrupts the stability of our neighborhoods. Protecting local homeownership. Homes that are being sold to developers could instead be purchased by individuals who were raised in Bethlehem, work here, and wish to continue living in their hometown. This displacement is eroding the community ties that have made Bethlehem strong. Lehigh University owns over 2,000 acres of land and has the financial resources to build its own off-campus housing compound on university-owned property. There is no need to expand into residential neighborhoods, disrupting the lives of local homeowners. Impact on housing costs and community. While Lehigh students contribute to the economy, their presence in residential neighborhoods drives up housing costs and often results in disturbances that negatively impact the quality of life for surrounding homeowners. So again, we're asking for a permanent moratorium on Lehigh University off-campus housing. And the last item to address is landlord-tenant issues. The relationship between landlords and tenants is a cornerstone of a healthy housing market, but there are serious issues in Bethlehem that need to be addressed to protect both parties by proposing the following actions. Mandatory education for landlords and tenants. We call for mandatory state and local education programs for both as requirements for obtaining a rental license and CO. Educating both parties on their rights and responsibilities will help prevent disputes and ensure fair treatment. We'd also like to request a reform of outdated ordinances. Many of Bethlehem housing ordinances are outdated and no longer provide adequate protection for landlords or tenants. These laws need to be reviewed and reformed to reflect current realities and to provide effective safeguards. Establishment of a dedicated landlord-tenant court. The current district magistrate system is overwhelmed with citation cases logged for months, literally 6+ months. We propose the creation of a dedicated landlord-tenant court to expedite the resolution of disputes and ensure timely justice for all parties. In conclusion, Bethlehem is a vibrant, diverse community that deserves thoughtful, responsible leadership to guide its growth. We call on our city leaders to listen to the concerns of their constituents and take immediate action to protect the integrity of our neighborhoods, ensure sustainable development, and safeguard the rights of all residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker this evening, Christina Resitar.
I am one of the tenant landlord disasters. I have been in my place for 4 years. A month after I had lived there, I have documentation well over 100 pages. I have called lawyers for 4 years. I have followed every avenue I can, including being here this evening. I don't know how to exhaust any other avenue. I live with, it rains in my house. I have 6 pots in my house last night catching the water from the rain. I have squirrels in my ceiling that they've been there so long. There, you can see it's warped from pee. I have black mold in my bathroom. My son and I are getting sick. He's produced an odd rash. He was getting scabs on his head. He was waking up in the middle of the night regurgitating different colors. My building knows about this. I have documented everything. I have reached out to them about everything. I've tried to reach out to the city, is actually aware of it. There are citations for them. I just don't know what else to do. They keep coming and just patching stuff and ignoring it and just saying we can't get approval to do a new roof of such a job to be done without them recognizing it. So apparently, quote unquote, they are getting the news, but they're not doing anything about it. And my foundation is sinking. Like, I can't even put my dressers certain ways or they'll break. I have to, you know, watch how I do everything. The place is disgusting. The carbon monoxide detector was 2012 outdated, and I moved in 2020. I had to call the fire department to come because I didn't know what to do when it was going off. They weren't responding to the emergency number. I don't know what else to do, where to go. I can't afford to be nowhere else. I have looked all around my vicinity because at the time my son was still in school. I was never approved or chosen because I'm a single income. I don't know what else to say. I have pictures say 1,000 words, and if I could just show you anything of what I have and the video of hearing the squirrels, like, we can't even use it for a bedroom because they're just directly above your head. The outside of my building is falling apart. It is so molded. Pieces of wood are falling apart. The electric in the wintertime, when I touch things, we get serious shocks. I mean, and all of this is documented. I just don't know where else to turn now. I've had 2 escrow accounts. I think this is a third, and I've had this escrow account since March, and I still have not released that escrow account. But there and again, it's not going to help me move because I still have to get approved to be able to afford an $1,800 a month thing, which is double what I pay now. And I can't even prove that I can make $1,800 a month. let alone be able to pay that rent, and then when I move somewhere else, I'm going to have to pay the electric, the garbage, the sewer, the water, all of that is going to be added in too on top of the double price in rent. So, and then I watch the Boyd being built, and I'm like, here, these people are getting luxuries, and I'm half a block away. And I don't know where to go or how to do this, and I don't know how to give my son a good home.
Ms. Rustar, I will say, if you want to stay for after the meeting, our Director of Community Economic Development, Ms. Collins, is there in the front row. Either if you want to talk to her now out in the hallway, or after the meeting, if you want to talk to any council members, we're here. And then all of our contact information is on the city website also, if it's not to your favor to stay that late, because I don't know how long the meeting's going to go. Ms. Collins could briefly speak to you now in the hallway, and then you can follow up with any council members either after the meeting or through email if you'd like.
Yeah.
Understood. Ms. Collins is going to go speak with you now. Our next speaker signed up this evening, Mr. Artie Caratola.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Lawford Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, aka J. Creed Cat Credo. On a positive note, I'd like to invite you all on Sunday at the I was asked to host a benefit for the Pink Pumpkins that raise money and support women who are victims of breast cancer. I'll be hosting that event from 10 until 3 in the 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon this Sunday at the Triborough Sportsman's Club in Northampton. You're all invited to come. There's no cover charge. Great entertainment. I got not only my band. My band kicks it off with a concert set from 10 in the morning till 11:15. That's the earliest I ever did a concert in my life. But I'm going to be there. And I did host one a few years ago for it. I was hosted from 11 in the morning to 11 at night. So I'll be able to hold up that time. Even though I've been a resident of Bethlehem for 76 years. But anyway, you're all invited. Come on out there. And on the other thing, it's not quite a positive note. I am a bit upset with the situation. I pushed endlessly for many, many years, not only in Bethlehem, in Philadelphia, New York City, other cities as well, Allentown, and Easton, to have surveillance cameras to eliminate the crime in the cities. And they finally did in Irwin Bethlehem in 2017, and we became among the safest cities in the country, the top 20. But the thing is, I find out throughout the course of the years, the surveillance cameras that we have, and I don't blame the police department at all on this, are scarecrows. Tony Soprano once said, an unloaded gun is not worth anything. So load those cameras. How I know they're not working, I was a victim of $7,000 being lifted in the library. I reported it to the police. The report back, police officer said, sorry, the camera wasn't working. In the public library of Bethlehem, a city operated venue, the cameras weren't working. I was sitting right by a computer where there was a surveillance camera right above, and it wasn't working, or it wasn't aimed, or it wasn't going around, so that it would catch the person that when I went to the restroom, they took one of these things out of my briefcase, had $7,000 of cash in it, because I won't have on my credit cards more than $1,000 on one credit card. All the other ones, I gotta get the money out of the bank. Or I gotta personally do it, and, well, I put it on my credit card, that's it. But, my debit cards. So, I'm looking around for another vehicle. I figured I had the cash to pay for it. But now I don't got the cash to pay for it, because somebody thought they were getting a SSD drive, and they hit the jackpot, got $7,000. Now, I'm not a rich guy. I don't pimp for my money. And one other thing, I don't get paid more than what I should, like some city officials. No reflection on any of you guys. You get paid less than you should. But the thing is, there's a lot of city officials, you just need to look into it, that they keep on getting more and more money. They pay too much. Bring the money down. They should not be paid more than what the mayor gets. And of course, you guys can't vote for getting more. It's a conflict of interest to try to get more money for city council members. But somebody should be able to adjust that properly. Certain city officials aren't getting paid way too much. But the thing is, I don't get paid that much being a musician. And I got $7,000 taken because the surveillance cameras couldn't find a perpetrator when I went to the restroom. I'm out $7,000. I'm not happy with that. You know, that's all I need to say. I'm an unhappy camper. God bless you all. Hope to see you Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Caratola. Our next speaker is Frank. I want to say Martimore, but I may be misreading that, so I apologize.
Well, it's Martimucci. Martimucci.
Thank you, Mr. Martimucci. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's been worse than that.
Hi, President. I want to talk about stop signs by my home. They run it like it's NASCAR. I almost got clipped 3 times. It's Ravenwood Drive and Bonnie Drive. Well, I would like speed bumps there, and it wouldn't happen because their heads would go through the roof. I almost got clipped with my family the other day. Had to be doing 50 through the stop sign. I stopped, and I don't have a stop sign. So that's all I really have to say about that area. Bonnie Drive and Ravenwood Drive. It's crazy. I have a couple of neighbors with me to attest to it. Everybody around that whole place, they know it. They say, we stand there and go, we can't believe that they don't even slow down. And there's children there on skateboards and bikes. And a lot of times I walk my dog and I stand there. Then they slow down because they don't know who I am. That's when they slow down. If I wasn't there, right through it like it's nothing. Okay? That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Martimucci. We do have a captain from our police department here this evening, and I will just say, based on my understanding, you talk about speed humps. That's something that it has to be certain circumstances, Mr. Alcohol, correct me if I'm wrong, to put into a residential neighborhood. But our police department is here listening as it relates to Ravenwood and Bonnie.
Over all they would have to do is put a car there, a couple of days, 7 out of 10 people run it.
Understood.
I sit on my porch and watch it.
Thank you, Mr. Martimucci.
Okay, thank you.
Our next speaker signed up, Teresa O'Doul.
Good evening, City Council members. My name is Teresa O'Doul, Vera Circle. And today I just wanted to briefly address an ongoing issue that we've been experiencing during our annual Music Fest events, specifically regarding like the management of horse waste. So, you know, first I want to thank the City of Bethlehem, the Arts Quest volunteers, vendors, and others who contribute to make this event a success year after year. And as an attendee of these events, and while I know it might seem a bit inconsequential, I often notice that horse waste, specifically from the police horses, is not being promptly cleaned up, especially in high traffic areas like our food vendor walkways. And so as we know, this not only creates an unpleasant environment, but also can pose as a health risk. And so just to illustrate this a bit further, I see typically 3 scenarios. One, where police horses walk on the festival grounds and then produce waste as they're walking with no individual present, and it is just left there. The second scenario I see is horse waste being visible on the festival grounds. There's no police presence, but it's just left there sitting for hours. And then 3, you know, walking through a very crowded area, especially where food vendors are present, near the corn, as many know. And then just noticing an unexpected, unpleasant odor, and suddenly appear, where attendees then are sort of like pinching their noses, have confused looks on their face at the, you know, the source of the odor. And, you know, upon looking down, I'm walking and I notice that people are literally stomping the waste into the ground. And so then now my question is, you know, who is responsible for cleaning up after these police horses waste? I know this is an event where multiple vendors are involved, stakeholders, members of the city. And then my second question is, you know, how can we coordinate a system where there is always someone on site, possibly in collaboration with the police, to handle waste collection immediately? And I want to reiterate, I know I do appreciate the efforts of our volunteers who clean up before the events start every day. However, this is just something that I've just noticed persist year after year among these festivals. And as we know, addressing this issue will greatly enhance the cleanliness and enjoyment of our events. And I thank you for attention to this matter and for your continued events and your continued efforts in making these events very successful. So thank you.
Thank you. If you want to stick around again to after the meeting, or just email our city clerk at your convenience to forward your information to us, we could work on kind of following up on some of those things.
Thank you.
And our last person signed up this evening, Harry Faber.
Hello, City Council. It's good to be back. I'm sorry to everyone who attended last meeting and didn't get to hear the phrase, be a little revolutionary. That's on me. But I did notice a trend. Now, at Moravian, I used to tutor statistics, so maybe I'm just keen on picking up trends. But Mayor Reynolds has a trend of missing public comment. I don't know if anybody else noticed, but he hasn't been here for, now I wasn't here at the last one, but I'm pretty sure I was told he wasn't there. He wasn't at the one before, and I don't know if he was at the one prior to that, but this is the third one in a row, I believe, where Mayor Reynolds has missed public comment. That's a concern. But so much has happened since the last meeting I attended and spoke at. Too much. You know me, I love the sound of my own voice, so I obviously have something, or I have to say something, but deciding what to spend my precious time on was extra challenging. I knew I wanted to speak about the issue that started my participation at City Council, that being the genocide in Palestine. And I've been reading a lot of texts and books lately about both the history of this conflict, which is rooted in European colonialism, as well as critical texts on decolonization. And from my reading, I found a very accurate quote from the legend Audre Lorde, and that being, "For the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. They may allow us temporarily to beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change." Now let's break down that quote. What does Audre mean by master's tools? They are all the existing legal and political systems, institutions, and structures which serve as mechanisms of colonial oppression, perpetuating the hegemony of colonial power. For instance, court systems, laws, and policies are designed to maintain colonial control and suppress the rights of marginalized communities. Corporate structures prioritize profit over the rights and well-being of workers, exploiting them as a means to further imperialist agenda. Media outlets are controlled by colonial interests, which propagate stereotypes and biases, which reinforce colonial hierarchies and justify the subjugation of indigenous and oppressed peoples. Colonialism, capitalism, and imperialism serve as the formidable pillars of oppression, which were meticulously constructed and fortified by colonial authorities and their contemporary inheritors. This entrenched system represents a pervasive web of power and privilege woven into the fabric of society through insidious means. It encompasses not only legal and political structures, but also cultural norms, educational institutions, and economic frameworks, which were deliberately engineered to subjugate and exploit the masses. Another thing that happened, now I'm not saying you guys can end colonialism or imperialism or even capitalism or anything like that. I know you guys can't do that. But it starts with us. It starts at the local level. How can, I think I said that in my first, one of my first meetings, how can we pressure the federal government and these systemic issues unless we're coming together, working together, talking about these issues and acknowledging that they're real? It's almost as if the elite class, and I'm not saying, I mean, we've already discussed your wages, like you're not the elites, you're not billionaires, but you guys kind of represent them, in a sense. And, I mean, U.S. provided another $3.5 billion since the last meeting I attended, which I wanted to talk about, $3.5 billion worth of funding for Israel for spending on U.S. weapons and military equipment, which was immediately followed by a huge massacre in northern Gaza, where more than 100 people were killed and dozens more wounded by an Israeli bombing of a school sheltering displaced people in the area. All right? $3.5 billion. I don't know how much of that was our money, But this money, which has been a constant funding of Israel's military genocide, is money that could be spent on us, on our people. Like, the empire is crumbling, and it's like we're just going day to day hoping it crumbles before or after we pass. We can't just be living without accepting the fact that the systems we have are problematic, and since there are problems, we need to address those problems and try to create solutions which help and better the people of our community. Like, if the society crumbles, what have we been doing to make sure Bethlehem is sustainable? I'm not satisfied, and I'm not going to say I have all the answers, because I don't, but I don't know. I think we need to do more, and I think that starts by, again, people coming together and allowing the public on all these committees. Like, more, if somebody wants to give their precious time to helping and participating in the deliberation of how we spend our resources, our city's resources, they should be allowed to be on the committees. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. That exhausts our sheet of who had signed up in advance. So as always, I'll go around the room, starting with to the left. Was there anyone to the left who wanted to make comment who has not had a chance to make comment yet? I turn to the wide center. I'll work left to right, Mr. Hackett. And while Mr. Hackett comes up to the lectern, Mr. Faber reminded me, Mayor Reynolds did give council a heads up last week. Tonight there's a meeting as it relates to the World Heritage designation. So he will not be joining council this evening. Mr. Hackett.
My name is Bud Hackett, and I live in the city of Bethlehem. And I have a few comments. In my opinion, Bethlehem City Council hit a new low at its August 6th meeting. Instead of talking about the issues important to people and taxpayers of the city, council members are fighting among, I don't know if it's two or three factions, wasting valuable meeting time. You heard a little bit of before. In her continuing effort to oppose and silence Councilperson Callahan, Councilperson Kwiatek gave a long speech about microaggressions in an attempt to silence opposition to the mayor and the left-wing alliance of city council. Similar to the cancel culture tactics of a few years ago, Ms. Kwiatek wants to embarrass or suppress the opinions of Mr. Callahan by accusing him of decorum violations of microaggression. Really? There's no microaggression rules in politics. Council is all Democrat. There is little balance in or on the group. Only sometimes do two council members disagree with the mayor's initiatives. The voting bloc almost always supports the mayor's proposals with very little analysis or scrutiny that we see. See opinions, but not analysis. It is good for our city and its people when there is open, transparent, and civil discussion of city business. Citizens of Bethlehem don't want or need a rubber stamp council. Yes, council members need to improve communication skills, and yes, we understand that some of them are friends and others are not. City council needs to focus on what is best for the people and not on their special interests, and certainly not on petty personal disputes among the members. Thank you.
Mr. Hackett. Again, continue to go from left to right.
Couldn't let a meeting go by without speaking. I just want to thank council members for their support against the curative amendment at the July 31st. It really means a lot to the neighborhood, to my neighbors and myself, and we're very grateful. We just hope that he doesn't take it the next step, but we'll cross that bridge when it comes. Thank you.
Ms. Kloiber.
Terry Kloiber, 345 Grandview Boulevard. July 11th, I sent a note to my Bethlehem app, and it said, for safety and security purposes, I'm requesting that a street light be put on this pole, and I have a picture of the pole at the corner of my property. The other morning, I came out to walk, and there were two used condoms and wrappers laying on my curb and gutter. This is not the first time. It's very dark, and the light from the other pole does not shine over here. Also, because it is so dark, people are walking their dogs by at night and letting them crap on the grass and not cleaning it up. So I got a note on 7-Eleven that says, thank you for your request. Your request has been acknowledged and forwarded to the appropriate department. That's all I've heard since July 11th. I'd like to, and I will resend this back into them asking for a response. And I'm going to add on their health reasons also, because I am not going out there and picking up used condoms off of my gutter and street just to clean that out of there. And to leave it lay there, it's a shame, because then it gets washed away and who knows where it goes. But that's a health problem. And I'm a little disappointed that no one has responded back to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kloiber. Again, I'll acknowledge Mr. Alcar, Public Works Director, is here. He may be able to speak to you after the meeting. It's about that, or you could follow up with a member of council. Mr. Shire, I believe your hand was up.
I'm Bill Shire, 1898 Navanoe. I told someone I was going to quote Yogi Berra tonight about Gaza, deja vu all over again. And I mean that in a supportive way. And because I still feel, like I said the first time this came up, that we should be suspending military aid to Israel and offering an armed escort to any food convoy that requested it. Because as you may have heard, some of the convoys are being attacked by gangs and the food is looted and sold at black market prices. At least one convoy coming through the West Bank was ambushed by settlers, and the food was just distributed around the ground and destroyed. That in itself would cause an immediate ceasefire because there would be American troops all over Gaza. But I have one suggestion about what can be done. I sent another email today to the president, and it's, by the way, it's very easily done. You just Google White House, and you get a form to fill out, name, address, so on, and then you get up to 200 characters for a message. This one was about another matter. I suggested to the president that he find a plausible reason for transferring a significant number of troops to Alaska. Russia very likely would counter, thereby perhaps diluting its strength in the Ukraine. So, there's that. Now I want to talk about a much more prosaic local matter. I received a recent letter from the city clerk saying that no longer will copies of the agenda be mailed prior to the meeting. And I can understand and sympathize with the motivation, because the postage alone would be $18.72 per person per year. And I can live with this because I'm at the library almost every day. But there are people who can't afford to have the internet at home, which is a significant expense, and perhaps they're working two jobs, and it's not easy to get to a computer on the Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday before the meeting. And these people are thereby deprived of having advance notice of something they may wish on Tuesday evening to come and speak about. This is a reduction in participatory democracy. We have enough of that at the state legislatures who are trying to restrict the right to vote, including certain elements of our state legislature in Pennsylvania. And we should be going in the other direction to encourage participation. And in addition, there are seniors who have not yet adapted to the computer age, and this is their way of finding out beforehand what's coming up at City Council. They have to get a written notification. So I would like to suggest a compromise on this less than world-shaking matter, and that would be to continue mailing the notices to people who are willing to certify that they don't have internet at home. And I think that would be a way of helping make Bethlehem the model that we would all like it to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Moving to my right. Yes.
Hello, Valerie Noonan. I don't have anything lengthy for you today, but while I was outside earlier waiting for the meeting to start, I noticed someone trying to come in using the handicap button on the door to the rotunda, and it wasn't functioning. And talking to people out there, I am under the impression that it may not have been working for some time. So this is a city building, of all places. It should be handicap accessible. So hopefully that can be attended to. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else to the audience's left? Yes, in the middle row.
Hiba Akbar, Bethlehem. Like I stated before, my name is Hiba. I haven't been to City Council in quite some time, but if you do not know me, I am a 24-year-old graduate of Penn State University and a pre-medical student. I work as a medical assistant at the Lehigh Valley Health Network, and it's been exam season lately, so I haven't been in attendance lately. I do not plan on speaking today, but I was made aware today of one of the public comments made by one of our citizens today about affordable housing and mentioning one of the investments made by Lehigh University. Universities play a pivotal role within their local communities. Multiple studies have found a correlation between the presence of a university in a large town or city and the socioeconomic development in the local area. They are key drivers of social, technological, and economic innovation. As someone that had the privilege of serving 30,000 students across the Commonwealth of Penn State University, I'm abhorred to learn that there is disgust around the idea of increasing off-campus housing. I can understand the frustration around the decrease in housing for local residents. However, I do not believe that college students are the problem. 8% of American undergraduate students are homeless, according to a survey of more than 2,000 colleges by the U.S. Department of Education. It also found that 5% of graduate students are homeless, according to the Bipartisan Policy Center of the United States. In the Lehigh Valley, about 700 more people are homeless, according to January, a 6% increase since COVID-19. And if 8% of undergraduate students are homeless and you do the math, that's about 60 college students that don't have a home while they are pursuing undergraduate education. And that does not account for graduate students. There have been multiple studies that have increased the association between neighborhoods and educational achievement. Systemic reviews and meta-analysis that also reveal that adolescents and emerging adults spend significant amounts of time away from their homes, and parents are less able to monitor them or support them. This also results in a greater exposure to the influence of a neighborhood than younger children experience, as parents are better able to monitor the behavior of the latter. We expect stronger neighborhood effects for adolescents and emerging adults than younger children. They need the support. All of this to say is I completely agree with the idea of preserving the affordable housing for the city of Bethlehem. I simply have a very simple request and plea for the council not to forget about college students and the challenges that we face especially amidst a global pandemic where many students were forced out of their homes due to quarantine and were not able to go back home while they were still sick. In 2021, on my 21st birthday, I awoke to a positive test and a stuffy nose and a heavy chest. I was positive for COVID-19 on my 21st birthday. I wasn't able to go back home because my parents were immunocompromised, and I did not want to put them at risk, or my grandmother with dementia, who was also immunocompromised. I did not wish to give all of my roommates COVID-19. Many students had this kind of experience during COVID-19 and experienced this outside of the realm of the post-COVID-19 world that we are facing. I only plead the council that they do not blame Lehigh University for the decrease in affordable housing in Bethlehem and to keep college students in the back of their minds as they discuss a more responsible way of allocating housing in the city of Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the wide center who wanted to make comment who has not had a chance yet? I turned to the right. Was there anyone to the right? Anyone that I missed? Thank you everyone for your comments this evening. We're going to move on to our second public comment. That is for any ordinance or resolution that council is voting on this evening. No one had signed up in advance, so again, I'll go around the room. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment? Mr. Faber?
I did have the time to look at the agenda this week. The one thing I just want to point out is like the Director of Health memo, the budget adjustment for cribs. I believe it was like what, $150,000 or something like that, designated to the purchasing of cribs, or was it $100,000? Now, again, I'm not saying that kids don't need or babies don't need cribs. That's not the point. The problem is the insurance industry, which is driving up the cost of healthcare, are a huge issue. And that the money that is spent being like on these cribs, again, everything in our healthcare industry is so overpriced, and it's what you would call price gouged. And I'm not saying don't give the money for the cribs, babies need cribs, but I just wanted to talk about price gouging in the medical industry, and it's messed up, and we should do something to address it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Is there anyone else to the left who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on this evening? I'll turn to the wide center. Anyone in the center who wants to make comment on anything on the agenda? Turn to the right. That concludes our second public comment. Moving on to old business. Any old business for members of council? Mr. Callan?
Yeah, I didn't want to. I just want to make some brief comments on Ms. Cramsey Smith's comments earlier and Mr. Hackett. So I'm not sure if a couple council members here are going to think this is a microaggression or macroaggression or whatever, but there was a question about attendance of my particular attendance, I assumed. And I would have also assumed that the person that brought it up probably should have did some research before they spoke. I did some after we left. I had the city clerk run the absenteeism. And, number one, the only one that we really have to account to is the voters. The three meetings that I missed, I reached out to the president of our council and told him I had family matters I would be attending, and I wouldn't be here. And that was three times. We had another councilwoman that's missed the same exact amount of meetings. We have another councilwoman that missed one less. I don't question them. We never question them. If they're sick, they have family obligations. We have hundreds of meetings every year, between council meetings and committee meetings and going to events in the city. And, I did what I was supposed to do. I reached out to Mr. Colon all three times that I missed and told him I had issues that I was, or not issues, but I had family obligations, and I was going to them as a single parent. You know, if someone on this council didn't agree with that, hey, that's your problem, not mine.
There's a quote that I just want to bring up here. From a famous Democrat, which I will not name right now, but there's nothing more un-American than thinking everyone has an obligation to share your particular thoughts or your particular beliefs. It's kind of the whole point of our country to not do that. I'm not here to agree with anybody on here or the administration. In fact, I would strongly suggest, and I think all of you would agree with me, or most of you that know me, if you looked at my literature that I sent out, I went after some of the things that this administration was doing that I didn't agree with. And I got voted in on that. There's nobody that voted for me who didn't know what they were getting. I guarantee you that. I did 8 years of it. If the mayor and administration does something positive, I've complimented them. But I'm not here, and none of us are here, to constantly agree with everything that the administration does and appease them. We're here as a check and balance to the administration. And, you know, there's things that the mayor's done in the administration, I've complimented him on it. Same thing with Mayor Donchess, I've complimented him on it. But when things go wrong, I bring it up. I put out one of my mail pieces. I couldn't have been any more straightforward. I didn't think that the mayor's approach to buying those three churches and putting pressure on the developers and telling them, hey, you better back off on it.
Mr. Callahan, that's not my. I want to make a point of order that's
well,
that's irrelevant to this.
I know.
Or non-contextual, and there's no way for any of us to fact check that.
It was published on it. Those comments aren't my comments. They're a realtor's comments who said that, and it was also posted on by a local blogger. So it's not my comments. I mean, I can read it for you if you'd like.
That's unnecessary, Mr. Callahan.
Thank you.
We don't interject
right.
Matters irrelevant to
right.
Your point.
My point is this. Everybody knew what I was getting. If there's a couple councilwomen on here that don't particularly like something I'm saying, well, then come up with a better debate. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be here to debate, not agree on everything. It's not supposed to be 707070. So, we all have the right to speak, all of us. Even if you don't agree with me, you don't have the right to even question something I'm saying. It's my opinion, not yours. If you don't like it, I don't have to tell you. But I have the right, and so does Councilwoman Cramsey Smith, and so does everybody else, to speak two times, according to Robert's Rules of Orders. That's how our meetings are run. And I'm allowed to speak, and you're allowed to speak a third time if you get the approval of the president. I follow Robert's Rules of Order. If I'm going to speak, I ask for permission to speak. And I follow the rules. Some people in here don't. That's my opinion. You know, I was born and raised in upstate New York. I lived there until I was 11 years old. I still have a little bit of an accent. So I apologize for having that accent. But I was also raised with three Irish brothers who, it was tough to get a word in. But I was also a health and phys ed teacher involved with sports and coached for a significant part of my life, 30 years. Part of being a health and phys ed teacher in the classroom, and even more so in the gymnasium, is to project my voice. I speak like this all the time. If you know me, I'm energetic. So I'm not changing my tone and pitch if you don't like it. I would say to you, get tougher skin. This is an elementary student council. It's not middle school student council. It's city council. She doesn't like that I'm looking over at her.
I'm happy to look at you.
Right.
I'm looking at you.
Well, don't interrupt me.
I don't appreciate the implication that this is elementary school. It isn't.
Well,
point of order recognized by Ms. Wilhelm. Mr. Callan, please continue with your comments. Try to avoid any personal interjections.
I won't. But those two, her and another council woman, question my, I guess, my tone or my pitch or whatever. I don't care if you don't like my tone or pitch. Go look at the words that I'm saying. And if you don't like it, come up with a better argument or a better debate. But I'm allowed to have my opinion as you are, or anybody else's. And you too, Mr. Colon. Everybody has their own opinion. That's why we were voted in. And make no mistake, people knew what they were voting in when they voted for me. So my last point on this is, you know, we're here to hold the administration accountable. We're to check and balance. And I plan on doing that continuously for the next three years until another election comes up. If the voters don't like it, then they can vote me out. I don't care. They can vote me out if they don't like what I'm doing. But I got voted back in, I think, because it was missing, that they thought the council went a little bit too far left.
Mr. Callahan, again,
that's my opinion. It's my opinion, right. It's my opinion. I'm allowed to have an opinion. And I appreciate, you know, and then the pressure that they were trying to put on you to try to stifle me somehow and Ms. Cramsey Smith is ridiculous. This is a free country. Everybody's allowed to have a free opinion.
Again, you're assigning motive.
No, I'm saying my opinion. These are all my opinions.
I recognize that, but we're still, I still would rather you not assign motive to
I'm not assigning motive to anybody. What I'm doing is I'm stating my opinion on it. So, you know, Miss, last thing. If these are microaggressions, you're going to have to deal with them. If they're microaggressions, you're going to have to deal with them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I'll share any thoughts I have when we get to the mayor's report overall, but anything else for new business? Councilman Wilhelm? Old business, pardon. Thank you. I made the same mistake last week.
With regard to the last meeting, I mean, I suppose I'll say that I agree with everything Councilperson Callahan just said, in that we are to respect one another's opinions. And if you watched the last meeting, I literally uttered the words, "This is my opinion." Because I want to be clear that I'm stating my opinion. So respecting each other's opinions goes both ways. So I hope that you take your own, I hope that we can all take our own words to heart and respect the opinions of others even when we don't agree with them. So respecting opinions goes both ways. I wanted to also address the public comment from Mr. Hackett, just to say that I understand completely anyone who is dismayed by a vote, by any voting body that they don't agree with. Absolutely. We all have our wishes and wants and perspectives, and it's hard not to be agreed with. It's hard to see votes happening that we wish were different. I understand and respect that completely. Generally speaking, I don't go into meetings knowing how all of my colleagues are going to vote on any issue. I do my own work to make those decisions, whether it be my own personal research or conversations. But I'm certainly not going to change my vote just because I suspect my colleagues will agree with me. I think being checks and balances is appropriate, but if you do your checks and balances and happen to agree with a policy, that's the way that goes. That doesn't mean that you're not doing your due diligence. If you happen to do that work and agree with the policy, you've done that work and you agree with the policy. I find it equally unethical or distasteful to vote to disagree just to disagree as to agree just to agree. And I don't suspect, this is my opinion, that anyone up here is agreeing just to agree. I don't know that anyone up here is or is not disagreeing just to disagree, but I wanted to make that statement to you. I understand how that feels. I've been on that, your side of it as well. But don't expect me, certainly, to change my vote just because it's in support of a policy or a resolution being, proposed by this administration, or because my colleagues agree with it. And I hope that you can understand that perspective as well. And as you know, we've spoken offline before. I'm very happy to do that again. And please reach out if you want to talk to me more about that. Second, I really just wanted to thank all the artists, vendors, volunteers, police, fire, EMS, ArtsQuest attendees for a very successful music fest under not ideal conditions last week. I live close enough that I'm able to walk down even in the bad weather, and I did so, and it felt, it was heartbreaking to watch artists performing to 5 or 10 people, but maybe that's new business. Is this old business or new
business? Still on old business, actually, but I was going to let you finish your thought.
I appreciate it. I can stop and say that again during new business if you like. Would that be appropriate?
At this point, finish your thought about music.
Thanks to everybody, attendees, supporters, volunteers, everybody for a great music fest.
Thank you. Any other old business from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
I just want to follow up on the comments that Councilwoman Wong made. I agree with you 100%. When you made those comments last week, I didn't even say anything about it because it's your opinion. And again tonight, when you made your comments, they're your comments. You're allowed to. I'm allowed to have my opinions, and I respect you to have your opinion. But you got to respect my opinions too, because I was voted in just like you were, and I think the people that voted me in, I'm doing exactly what they voted me in for. And whether we can agree or disagree on that is whatever. But you have people that voted you in, and I think that you do a good job for them. And I have people that voted me in, and I think from what I hear, they say keep going. And that's what I'm gonna do. And I respect you, and I just want that respect back. The rolling eyes, I'm not saying you, but there's another person that I've been told from people in the audience, there's certain people that roll their eyes and they're always looking at each other. That's okay. I don't care. It's just childish behavior to me. So I would just hope that we each respect each other's opinions. And if we disagree, so be it. But I welcome the debate out here. I think this is where we should have it, not in the back rooms or on back phone calls. I think we should have the debate here in front of the press, in front of the cameras, and in front of the people that are here. So that's why I do this here. Thank you.
Any other old business from members of council? We're going to move on to new business. Any new business from members of council? Councilwoman Leone?
I just had some questions about some of the comments that were made. Sorry, that took longer than I thought. I had a question for our officer. I apologize, Officer Hackett, but when it comes to the Mounted Patrol, I assume, well, I know because I've worked with them, that they kind of police their own waste. I know that we were down a lot this music fest because Lancaster disbanded. Did that have an effect on why it was harder to pick up waste? Are there other rogue forces at music fest that we don't know about? Or are there situations where it's unsafe to collect the byproduct of our wonderful Mounted Patrol? So I was wondering, do you have any insight on what's going on with the stuff at Music Fest?
Do you need me to address that from the podium?
Captain, if you don't mind, either that microphone or that microphone.
Well, this one's closer, so that's an easy decision. So it's not that there were any rogue horses at Music Fest distributing their waste. So Lancaster's inability to provide a mounted unit had zero effect. State police, as well as the Bethel Mounted Unit, perform their duties at Music Fest. They frequently, and for good reason, split up into teams. ArtsQuest provides the funding for one individual to clean up after those horses. Mr. Rice is equipped with a bucket, a shovel, and a fancy golf cart. He goes where he's called. The officers during Music Fest would not be prudent to dismount and clean up after the horse. So that's why there is an individual whose job that is. Should there possibly be two or more, that would be a cost that would be attributed to ArtsQuest, but that's certainly can be looked into for next year.
Thank you very much. The other question that I had, and also thank you to the person who brought this up, because it is definitely a point of discussion that we can have. I had a question about the My Bethlehem app and who actually answers the requests that are put in through the My Bethlehem app. Does it go directly to whatever department the concern is addressed to? Is there like a little catch-all?
The applications are collected at the Bethlehem Service Center.
Okay, so everything runs
through. Which is part of the police department. From there, it is evaluated. If it's any kind of emergency, it's moved to 911 immediately. If it's a non-emergency call, it's then dispatched through our internal system called Service Request, but that does not integrate. It's not a two-way back and forth. It was never designed to do that. So if you put in your request, it's received, it's sent to the applicable department, whether it be Public Works, whether it be the Fire Department, EMS, whoever, or Community Development, to address.
Is there a procedure where if the same issue is placed multiple times and it hasn't been addressed to like the community satisfaction, i.e. like a stoplight or something, is there a process in place to reach back out to them and explain why we can't do that thing or why we wouldn't choose to do that thing?
No, I think the service center is equipped to engage in that kind of debate or dialogue. Yeah, no.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry, President, I'll give you a second to go through my notes.
No need to apologize.
I think Mr. Virgilio left, but I enjoyed his comments, and you were right. It's $90,500, not $9,500 that the mayor makes. I also agree that I think, given he's our top position, he probably should make the most, but that could be the military brain in me. I also appreciated his comments about council pay, because it's really a privilege to be able to serve up here, and I mean literally a privilege. If you are financially strapped, this isn't something that you can do. And sometimes the council pay that we make is enough to cover childcare. So it really does open up a lot of other people that live in the city to be able to, put their name in the hat for this, because they would be able to pay for childcare. And that would give us like the people in the city that are dealing with these really difficult housing situations or affordability situations. So I think it is a conversation worth having, although it's a conversation that gives me the ick, because like, why would we vote on our pay? The only other things that I wanted to talk about were housing. Ms. Daniels brought up a bunch of great ideas, some that are outside of our control. I believe as a third class city, we are not allowed to do any type of moratorium. I actually don't think that anybody in the state of Pennsylvania can do a moratorium. I'll turn generally to the legal area in the room.
I agree.
You agree. Okay, so we're not allowed to do moratoriums, but we do need creative thinking in order to get through these situations. And as also another community member, HIBA, brought up, there are a lot of sides to this. So continuing to have housing conversations are very important. And considering we're talking about Lehigh, I would just encourage people to get engaged with Southside Tomorrow. There is a housing committee that meets and regularly speaks about housing issues regarding the South Side. So with these issues specifically, that would be a great place to start having the conversation so we can learn about what is within our right to do, what is legally outside of our right to do, because we have to be very well informed to come up with a good solution. And not all the solutions reside on this side of the table, because we don't all live in the situations that you all live in, but it is a really good jump off point for us to start having authentic, real conversations about what we need to see as a city. And I just gonna turn to Director Collins and question if there's anything that we could know about the situation that was brought up, because that is a very distressing thing to hear. So I'm just curious as to the insight that you have on that situation, and if there's a role that council can play in rectifying this.
Yeah, without looking up the current status, I can say that we are familiar with the property. Our housing inspectors have been in multiple times. There was a round of citations. It did go through the magistrate process. So as you know, we enforced based on city ordinance. It did go to the magistrate. Fines were issued. You know, problems in the property itself continued. There's a new round of citations that have been issued for the property. So it is still, you know, fit for habitation, such that it doesn't need to be, you know, posted, and you know, the individual who lives there doesn't need to leave. But there are a variety of issues at the house that's been on the property for a long time.
Okay, and I might be getting into the weeds with this a little bit, but is there a role that our health department plays when it comes to like mold and lead remediation? And if that is the case, can the health department go into a rental property without jeopardizing the renter having like retaliation against them? Are there protections that we have legally been able to do?
Well, so the mold and lead are sort of two different tracks, but the short answer on mold is no, and that's not just in the city of Bethlehem. It's in most municipalities. In Philadelphia, for example, they've got this whole explainer on their website that basically says, you know, mold issues are landlord-tenant issues and can't be kind of like monitored or enforced through the Health Bureau. And that's in part because of the testing and, you know, the certifications that you need for that. And it's just, it's very uncommon for municipalities to get involved in mold issues for a variety of reasons. When it comes to lead, we do have the Lead in Healthy Homes program where we've got HUD grants, but those are elected by, in most cases, property owners who income qualify if they've identified, income qualification, also some other eligibility requirements include, like, if there's a child in the house or somebody over 65, there's different ways that you can be eligible for funding to make remediation of lead, or in some cases other like health hazards. But so in addition to qualification, you would then need a willing owner of an owner-occupied property, or we do have a component of the program for rental properties where a renter could income qualify, but what would be required of the owner of that property, they still need to be willing to have those repairs be made, and then by accepting the dollars that are available to do the remediation, they do have to agree to some restrictions on raising rent in the future, right? Because we don't want to create an incentive for a landlord to get some money to like make some improvements and then raise the rent and kick out the income qualified tenants and, you know, charge somebody else more. So we had to put that protection in place, but as a result, you know, if you have bad actor landlords, they just won't take advantage of the program.
So if there are protections in place, if somebody takes advantage of a government program, that they cannot then, you know, not necessarily retaliate, but up the rent because
right.
They rehabilitated their property with our money.
Right.
But that's, you said that's for lead, and you said something about the state and mold. So are we prohibited at the state level to do anything regarding creating an ordinance similar to the lead ordinance with mold? And if that's a solicitor question that I have to email Steph about, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I was just curious as to if there's a state level.
I'm not sure. What I know in practice is that I don't know of any municipalities that do
mold
regulate mold, but I don't know if that's just for practical reasons or for
okay.
legal reasons, to be honest. I'm not sure.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm good. Thanks.
Any other new business from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Mr. Evans and Mr. Apple, I don't know if you guys want to tag team this one or not, but so last meeting I asked you guys about the cost sharing money from UGI, and then I don't know if you know this or not, I'm sure they probably reached out to you, but apparently I talked to Controller Yasso, and so the monies that came in are a little bit more than what we talked about, and I just wanted, so can you explain to me, Mr. Evans, there's like going to be a new process that you're now going to come to council for as far as the escrow account? You guys are going to establish an escrow account?
I think what you're referring to, Mr. Callahan, is that the money was budgeted based on the cost-sharing agreements that were in place. And then when the money came in, it was double-counted, creating the account balance to be double what we really have in funds for the agreements that have already been executed in place. And right now, between the administration, Public Works Controls Office. We're devising a method to make sure that that doesn't happen again in the future. So either if it's budgeted and there's a revenue expectation based on those agreements, then when the money comes in, it's supposed to be deposited in the general fund, for example. If not, if there isn't a line item specifically we didn't know at the time of the budget to establish a line item with a revenue source of that amount, then we're gonna create an escrow account where when the money comes in, it goes into the escrow account and then move into the line item, just right. To make sure that money isn't double counted and showing a balance.
So the money was not going into an escrow account. That's something new we're gonna do now to make sure it's being appropriated. Correct.
But we're budgeting correctly and we're reflecting what's available to expend.
Right. So yes. My main concern is that the money that UGI is giving us to the city to repair roads that they damaged, mm-hmm. that money is going into repairing roads that they damaged.
It absolutely is, yes.
Yeah. And so I would, I know Mr. Yasso, I don't know if Mr. Yasso had a chance to talk to you about it. I know we talked to Lenny, right?
He spoke to me as well.
Okay.
Yeah, we've all talked.
All right. So are you all in agreement that money, so there's now any of the UGI funds that come in for cost sharing from UGI for roads that they ripped up, that money is now going to go into an escrow account, and that money will be used only for repairing roads.
Always has.
Yeah, it
has.
But it wasn't being accounted properly. There was a disconnect, according to me. Those are the words from Mr. Yasso.
It was just double counted. It was still.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, please don't speak over each other. It makes it hard for people watching video.
It was an account intended to be used to address road maintenance, road repaving, as intended.
So, these are his numbers, not mine. So, according to Mr. Yasso, 2023 and 24 total, there was $630,000.
That sounds about right.
Right. $358.82. Right.
That covered two agreements.
Right. All that money went into repairing our roads.
Correct. Right. Not all of it has been utilized yet. There's still a couple hundred that we're in the process of using.
Right. And the projections coming in for 2025 is $2.3 million.
Correct.
Okay. So when we do budget season, and you're saying
we'll see that in the budget.
Yeah, but my point is this. We have not gotten, years prior to 2023, we weren't getting a lot of money from the cost sharing from UGI because they weren't ripping up as many roads. It was a small, much smaller amount of money.
That, and we hadn't devised a cost sharing approach yet.
Right,
at
right.
one point, both UGI and the city devised this plan because it benefited both parties. UGI wasn't in the business of restoring roads. Unfortunately, but we are, and this was a good way to serve both parties. In that, once they do their work, and there's an impact that requires that the road be completely milled and repaved. Once the work is completed, once they're done with their work, they can walk away from the job and just basically pay us the equivalent of what it would have cost them
right.
to hire a contractor to do that work. Instead, we get that money. And we do the work, we do it in-house more effectively, and we make the dollars go farther and be able to do more work as opposed to less.
So my last question is, so in our budget season coming up,
yes.
From what I remember in the last 8 years when I was on council, I think, it was like maybe 1.5 or 2.2 million 1 year, 1.8 million on roads. I would hope that when the budget, before it comes to us, that we have the money broken out, that this is the money that we usually spend on roads, and we're going to have an extra $2.3 million from UGI.
Absolutely. It'll be broken out. In fact, we're going through the five-year plan right now, and right now the projected available funding for road work for next year is somewhere north of $5 million.
Beautiful. That's my main concern is that we catch up. And Mike, I know every mayor, including Mike Donches and Cunningham and my brother, I know that you have advocated for more money every year. And I know budgets were budgets, some years are very tight. I get it. But now's the time to catch up with this UGI money coming in. And I think $5 million would be a substantial amount of money, maybe even triple what we normally spend, almost, right? Or,
At least double.
Yeah. So I appreciate the information. And so you guys will be coming to council to ask us to make these budget amendments.
If you present it in next year's budget, you'll see in detail what funding are available, including cost-sharing funding with UGI.
Beautiful. Thank you.
While I'm up here, if I may,
yes,
that would be helpful. The issue of the Bethlehem Service Center and the app, as Mr. Evans indicated, unfortunately, it wasn't designed for back and forth. And this has come up before, so it may be helpful to explain this. It was really mainly meant for reporting issues that clearly need addressing by the city, like, okay, I use a pothole. It'll report it, it goes to the Bethlehem Service Center, it gets sent to the appropriate bureau. In this case, it would be streets. Our guys would get it, they would go and fix the pothole, because obviously something needs action, and they'll take that action. And there's no mechanism to go back and tell the resident, fortunately or unfortunately, what we did. The expectation is that it's going to be addressed. Unfortunately, in this particular example, Ms. Glover reported that she believes that a light needs to be installed at a certain location. That may be the case, but when she reports that, it goes to, most likely, it came to the service center since it's been since July 11th. I'm going to make some guesses of what might have happened, and I'll find out and get back to Ms. Glover. It might have went to the, then it would be dispatched to our area, service order would be made to our electrical bureau. They would go out and take a look at the area, look at the pole she's requesting a light on, evaluate the street lighting. There's certain criteria that we are obligated to meet, like three candle across the cartway, in that area we're talking about. They might have looked at it and decided, at least for street lighting purposes, there's adequate lighting. Then they would stop, and that's the end of it. She would not be aware that they did that, and they decided, they unfortunately didn't agree with that. That might not have been what happened, but if they did, that would be the case. Best thing, if it's not a routine request, this is, I would say, unfortunately, not a routine request, is either write us or call us, so that there could be a dialogue and we can explain if we're not in agreement, if we don't take action that you agree with, so that you have the opportunity to at least be aware of that or do something about it that changes our mind in order to provide the request.
Can I just say something?
Ms. Kloiber, if you were speaking to Mr. Alcock after the meeting, I don't want to open this up to a back and forth.
No, it's just that when they've been in, they get an email that says it's closed.
I understand, and that was communicated previously, but thank you for clarifying. Thank you, Mr. Alcohol. Mr. Callahan had ended his comments. Ms. Leone, did you have something
else? I was going to ask if you didn't mind if I had a quick follow-up question for you on that. So when you're deciding through the app, the person who goes out doesn't have, I'm assuming they don't have like the authority to make a decision that says we want a light here. That would have to be something, they would have to close that out regardless, and it would have to come back to you to open a discussion about whether it's like, since it doesn't meet these wickets, we're not going to do anything.
Unfortunately, okay. if the decision was made that a light is not needed at that location, mm-hmm. they would still close it out, as in they looked at it and they just made that decision. Yeah.
By a very specific set of standards, like it's this far away from this.
So would it be closed? Just because it was closed, it doesn't mean that
we can't then have
another conversation. That we complied with the request. It just means the request was evaluated and the action that we deemed was appropriate was done.
Thank you very much.
President Cromwell.
Ms. Cranston Smith, I'm going to turn to Ms. Laird because I saw her virtual hand up first, and then I'll turn to Councilwoman Cranston Smith.
Thank you. Just a few things here. One, just a small point of clarification for one of the public comments, the cribs, which I think it is awesome that we have funding to assist people who are in need with cribs. It would be great if everyone could get one for free or whatever, but it was a $15,000 adjustment, not $150,000. Second, for the agenda mailing, I didn't know that we were actually doing that. I'm wondering, as a middle ground, I understand that it would be a challenge to print stuff envelopes, pay the postage, mail to every person who I assume is on some sort of list to receive the paper copies.
I'm wondering if copies of the agenda could be posted like on the door of City Hall or even emailed to some of our public locations throughout town, like fire department. They could print it and post it on their door, and then for it would divide the labor and minimize costs because there wouldn't be postage, but people would have some more localized places to go find the agenda for city council meetings if they don't have internet access. Just a random idea that I had while thinking about that tonight. And the third thing is back to the app. I'm sorry to come back to this and ask you to come back up to talk about it. But I'm wondering what sort of ticket status mechanisms are actually in the app. So in the work order systems that I'm familiar with implementing, when you go in and close a ticket, there's usually a place to put a comment. And a lot of places will put a comment so that for their own records, they can go back and check, you know, why was this ticket closed? What was the resolved solution? Was it resolved or just closed, et cetera? So I'm wondering if there's that capability even just on the back end, and if so, if it could be looked into with the app producer, whatever that company is, to make the statuses visible on the front end, or to have comments that are visible on the front end.
I honestly don't remember for sure, but I think we looked into that, and from what I can remember, I'll have to go back and look with some folks just to make sure I'm remembering correctly. There wasn't any feasible way that that information could get back to the person that put in the complaint. You could do that internally, is my understanding, back and forth with internally to explain what happened to it, like why you closed the request. And what you did in response to the request, but there wasn't a efficient way to get that information or need that dialogue between the app and the person that puts in it. That's my recollection when the app was developed.
And I'm looking at the app right now, and I'm seeing that when you select like a point on the map where someone has put in a comment or a complaint, that there are some comments back, but I'm guessing that it doesn't notify those people. Is that what you mean by going back and forth? For example, I'm looking at one about people gathering in stairwells of Riverport parking garage, vaping and making people feel unsafe. And there's a comment from the service center saying you would need to call the non-emergency police number. Please note the status of your service request has been closed. So there's some ability, which seems like it would probably be a bit time consuming to go in and write back to each one, but are you saying that that doesn't notify the person who placed the
That was my understanding, or at the very least, there's not an opportunity to provide an elaborate explanation of what was done.
Got it. Thank you. And the other thing about the app that I just wanted to clarify, Mr. Evans, you had mentioned that sometimes emergencies come in and are sent to the police department when they come in. I just wanted to put on record, we do not recommend that people place emergency requests through the app, correct?
Oh, definitely not. Right.
Okay. Yeah, just wanted to make that really clear.
To make a phone call to 911 direct. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilwoman Laird. Councilwoman Cramsey Smith.
Okay. Thank you. I just had a couple of questions and comments. One, I don't want to be redundant, but I do want to thank Cassie and Music Fest and the volunteers, and especially all the staff at the city, the emergency responders for doing all the hard work for Great Music Fest in spite of the adversity. I did want to bring up the issue of tenant and landlord that was brought up earlier, and I'm wondering, because I dealt with an issue today regarding tenant landlord issues, and I'm not sure if this would be Ms. Collins, but I just want to get a feel for one of the issues today was that the tenant is going to be have to leave the house within 24 hours from tomorrow and didn't get a lot of leeway into this. And I'm wondering, like, when I know we have a lot of issues with inspections and we have new inspectors hired, and I'm wondering, how are things going? Like, are we still pretty backed up with inspections? Is it a real bad issue? And most importantly, if there's an issue with a rental and there's continual violations, at what point do we let the tenant know that they will have to leave or they'll likely have to leave? Because I just want to make sure that we're giving them enough time that they can find alternate housing.
So I'll take those, I think, in order, your questions. But so your first question was about a specific case that we were dealing with today, and that came to my attention at the end of the day. But it is reflective, I think, of the challenge overall in the housing situation when it comes to conditions at properties, because, you know, inspectors are inspecting based on the code, often, you know, citing for violations, but there is a point at which they become such life safety issues that a home becomes uninhabitable and has to be posted. But then that means that a tenant, often, you know, somebody who might be in a tough situation for a variety of reasons, is then left without an immediate place to live. And we understand that, you know, housing affordability is a huge challenge right now, and there's not a lot of available housing. So it's a really delicate balance in a lot of situations. And we try and use discretion, and you know, we try and make sure that, you know, we're evaluating all of these different factors. The specific case that you mentioned, I actually believe it was at the end of last week that the inspector identified that there were life safety issues that would likely require the house to be posted early this week. And so we did contact, or we tried to work with the Health Bureau to get community connections hooked up with the tenant, and I think in this case the tenant has a representative from Pine Brook, perhaps. You might know better than I do. Thank you for all your help on that case today. I think we had some challenges in communication that I think we need to evaluate internally, because they did not get resources to that individual until this afternoon. So we try to avoid certainly like a 24-hour turnaround. We think that's untenable given the housing conditions that we're facing across the city. So we usually try and give enough time and also immediately connect community connections with a tenant if there is a situation where a home is uninhabitable and has to be vacated.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess my point with that is, I understand you're doing all you can, this challenge, but I guess if the landlord is like not getting things done in an expeditious manner, like, can we maybe give the tenants more warning, like, look, this may happen up and you may want to start looking, you know what I mean? And the other thing, just so you know, from working in the county and the system for so long, one thing I did tell Kristen at the Health Bureau is everything shouldn't fall on the city. We want to do everything we can, but for example, this person is hooked up in the county, and the county, I think, probably has more resources than us for all these human services kind of services that are needed. So I did tell Christian that you know, they can find if they're hooked up with county services, or if they're not and they have children, it should be like an immediate children youth referral, just, you know, so that we know that we don't have to take the whole load all on our shoulders.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. Thank you. I think usually when there's a child that we do try and connect with children and youth, sometimes making calls like on behalf of the tenants, depending on the situation. So I appreciate very, very much your help.
Thank you. Okay. Would you say, though, in general, or do you foresee that the issue will get a little better with the new inspectors? I mean, is it going to just continue to be an ongoing problem, not having enough inspectors to deal with these deplorable conditions?
So currently we are scheduling inspections over a month out, in some cases close to 2 months out, between rental inspections, sales inspections. But we are very grateful to the City Council for approving the two additional housing inspector positions, which I think are much needed, as we've talked about at this point, now that the rental program really is up and running and we're getting into all these houses and trying to follow up on these complaints, because we don't want to just go out once. We want to identify violations and then have the capacity to continue to follow up and make sure that properties are getting the remediation that they need. So we are very grateful for the two additional positions. Those are posted right now. I believe we are getting resumes, but we have not hired yet for those positions. So we are still, you know, going to have that period of time where we, you know, need to bring people on board and get them up to speed and get them into the rotation, which has not happened yet. So, you know, to be quite frank, we are fairly strained at this point, but we're working really hard through it.
Okay, that makes sense. I was just wondering, I didn't realize they weren't hired yet, so hopefully things will get better. But anything, you know, I or we can do to help, which is, which just seems unfortunate, is getting worse, I think, and more frequent. So, thank you. The other thing related to, we talked a lot about the app today, and I thank Mr. Alcohol for explaining that. I'm not sure, when someone calls the city, I assume they have to call a specific department for a specific issue. Is that correct? And I don't know, Mr. Evans, would you know that? There's not like one number directly that they can call and get referred to the correct department?
865-7000 is a number we're trying for most efficiency to drive our phone calls to take the request, to get an understanding of what the request is, then they can wrap their request up and enter it into our service requests.
Okay. All right. Because the reason I ask is I've just been contacted by several people, entities, individuals that are having difficulty getting to the proper person or department in the city when they make phone calls. And I'm just wondering how we can streamline that, because people reached out and said they've spent maybe 2 months calling different departments, getting the runaround, and I'm not sure, you know, I know sometimes it's not, there's some extenuating circumstances, but again, I'm just trying to think of how we can streamline that process. And if we do it one person or one number that is more like a, you know, a central kind of intake or referral, for lack of a better word, that's good. But I think that we, if we can maybe look at that administratively, maybe you can talk to the mayor about it, because I only bring it up because I just am getting, you know, more and more people reaching out regarding that issue, and it's concerning.
Yeah. Yeah, there are numbers posted. One that causes confusion is when that we had for quite a while, maybe a singular person calling three or four different departments, making the same requests, and we had three or four departments working from different areas on the same idea. So, you know, it's always a constant strive to what's the most efficient way to collect, to understand the problem, get it to the right source, and have the problem serviced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe more of a nation between the departments or something pulling it together so that, you know, the correct department is dealing with the issue at hand. Thank you. And the only other thing I wanted to say is regarding the roads. Thank you, Mr. Alcock, for addressing that, and Mr. Callahan, because I know it's been an issue for years, and I know, Mr. Alcock, you've advocated as much as you can for money for the roads, and it's been a challenge. And again, it is probably the top one or two issues that constituents come to me about. We know either they live in the city or they live in the city and they don't anymore, but they come to visit relatives or they commute through the city, and you know, it's always about our roads. So anything we can do to really try to make an impact there, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Kleesak.
Thank you. Just briefly, on the matter, Ms. Collins, of the tenant-landlord situation that we heard about today, I did kind of wonder, I know it sounds like there's been extensive citations and repeated visits and things like that. Is there anything between just continuing to cite a landlord and then when you're finally able to condemn the building or decide that it's not habitable? It feels like people end up in a no man's land of just miserable living conditions that aren't quite dangerous enough yet for them to, you know, be told that they have to leave, which then leads to, of course, what Ms. Cramsey-Smith was explaining about that struggle itself. I'm just wondering, it just feels like there's this limbo state of between when things are, you know, really bad, but not bad enough that it's actually, you know, a life safety issue, and what we can do about that.
It is quite a challenge. So, you know, what is spelled out by ordinance really is that, you know, when we go out and inspect and issue violation notices, there's a certain number of days to remedy. And, you know, if violations are not corrected, we can ultimately go to the magistrate, and they can issue fines, or I believe, like, jail is an option for the magistrate, I believe, in the ordinance, but that's really up to the magistrate, and there's not much we can do in between. I mean, we can't personally go in and make repairs. You know, there's really not a lot of other ways to force property owners to do the work. We just, you know, have to take them to the magistrate for their failures.
So that's frustrating.
Satisfactory answer, yeah. Unfortunately.
Thank you. That's all I had, Mr.
Thank you. Any other new business from members of council?
Can I make a comment on that?
Mr. Callahan?
It's not, no, it's just, I don't need you guys to make a comment. And the sad part about it is, if the judge rules out, right, it's condemned, and the person's got to move out, now the family's got to find a new place to live, and then the owner of the property is forced to put more money into it, which he should be doing, and then what's going to happen to the rent? It's going to go sky high. It's a terrible cycle. It really is. But I feel so bad. I don't know if that she's still here or did she leave. My heart goes out there because it's almost like a lot of tenants don't want to complain because they don't want to be forced out to live in a or to, you know, because their rent's low and they don't want it because there are rental units in the city right now. There's not a lot available. And unless you have cash, first month, last month, and security deposit, it's very tough for these people to get into these rental units because there's someone else that has it. So my heart goes out to her. I don't think she's here right now, but it's a, you know, it's a very terrible position. But I don't know if the Red Cross or if there's any nonprofits that have places for these people to go while they're looking for new housing. So thank you.
Any other new business? So just a couple points I'll make for a discussion that came up. First, Mr. Alcohol, when you get a chance, if you could give us a status update about, we heard about the handicap button potentially malfunctioning here to come into the rotunda. If it is indeed a malfunction, if you could just give us an update on kind
of. If they need to activate it, they probably just forgot. I will remind them.
We did activate it, it's sticking.
It's sticking.
So then, if it is a true mechanical or electrical issue, you could just give us a timeline of, you know, what to expect. I know it's come up before, and there is this feature where you have to activate it, and that was part of the issue before.
And this also gets stuck sometimes because you grind it down, but okay.
Understood, and I appreciate whoever brought it up because it has come up at other meetings, and of course we do not want someone who needs to utilize that function to go without and not be able to use that. A couple other things that came up during new business and other comments that I heard as it relates to pay. I will just note that so the salary of the mayor, the salary of city council, salary of the treasurer, salary of the controller, all the elected officials is set by ordinance. Council has the right, like any ordinance, to amend anything new. I will just note, just for those following along, that if council were to choose to enact any changes to those salaries, they wouldn't take effect for seated elected officials. It wouldn't be implemented until someone won re-election or someone new was elected. So if council, for example, imposed a change in council salaries, there would be some disparity, at least while there was some turnover on council. But then eventually it would all catch up. So in terms of conflict was heard before and was quote, I heard from someone, truly council is the one who controls that. We just wouldn't see it unless anyone was reelected. So that's how that works for reference. And then as it relates to the agenda, our council solicitor, Attorney Stewart, who is participating remotely, was kind enough to remind me that due to the Sunshine Act, the agenda has to be posted at the site of the meeting, which is here, and we do have copies out in the hall, but I will speak to the clerks about potential remedies if anyone who truly needs it and doesn't have access to maintaining or attaining their own paper copy. Of course, we want people to have access to the agenda. We're not trying to limit people's access to city council. That would be contrary to a lot of the things that we've implemented the last couple of years. So if there is a remedy to making the agenda more accessible to those who truly need it, that's something that the clerks and I can discuss and come up with a solution for. So that's going to conclude new business. We're going to move on to communications. Communication 6A.
An August 2nd, 2024 memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearm at fair market value.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda this evening. Communication 6B.
An August 12, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Boscola recommends a contract with Herbert, Roland, and Rubik, Inc. of Allentown to provide engineering and construction administration services to replace the 100-year-old 2 million gallon drinking water reservoir located on South Mountain in Lower Saucon Township. The cost of the contract is $229,000 with partial project funding provided by an H2OPA grant. The contract shall run from the notice to proceed until September 30th, 2026. There are no renewals. 6 bids were received from reputable engineering firms. HRG was selected based on fee, experience, interview, and project approach.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda this evening. Communication 6C.
An August 12, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Boscola recommends a contract with AECOM of Conshohocken to evaluate the wastewater treatment plant's aeration tank performance and design criteria for the next phase of improvements at the plant. The cost is $45,900. The contract shall run from the notice to proceed through March 31st, 2025. There are no renewals. AECOM has satisfactorily provided work involving the wastewater treatment plant in the past.
And resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A July 29, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from DCED business manager Tiffany Wismer. Ms. Wismer recommends a contract with Omnis Landscape Architectural Planning and Art of Easton to provide a comprehensive parks and recreation master plan. The cost is $124,948. Work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
An August 13, 2024 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and a resolution. The permittee is Celtic Fest, Inc., doing business as Celtic Cultural Alliance. The event is for the 2024 through 2026 Celtic Classic Highland Games and Festival. The agreement specifies event times and the duration of facilities usage for September 27th through the 29th of 2024, and similar dates for 2025 and 2026. The premises also are specified, including various public properties, streets, and Sand Island West facilities.
And resolution 10E is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6F.
An August 14, 2024 memorandum from Deputy Director of Community Development, Sarah Satullo, with an attached resolution. Ms. Satullo seeks authorization to apply for a grant of up to $1.5 million of emergency solutions grant funds from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. This action would be done on behalf of Lehigh Valley's homeless service providers who are represented by the Lehigh Valley Regional Homeless Advisory Board.
And resolution 10F is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
An August 15, 2024 memorandum from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, with attached resolutions. Ms. Collins advises that two resolutions passed by City Council at its July 16, 2024 meeting must be revised to reflect the amounts of grant funding sought. The multimedial transportation fund grants are offered through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. One is for $695,339 towards construction of sidewalks in the North Side Alive neighborhood and the South Side Business District, and the other is for $1.8 million towards the West Broad Street renovation project.
And both resolutions 10G and H are on the agenda. Communication 6H.
An August 12, 2024 memorandum from Business Administrator Eric Evans with an attached amended ordinance. Mr. Evans, in a July 8, 2024 memo, requested funding for up to 9 cadets to attend a fire academy. Bill number 25-2024 was approved July 16th on first reading. However, second reading of the bill was postponed at Council's August 6th meeting because Mr. Evans advised that not all 9 cadets would be attending academy training. It has since been learned that 8 cadets will participate. Mr. Evans wishes to amend Bill 25-2024 to authorize spending for 8 cadets rather than the original 9. This amended bill is offered for second reading this evening.
And ordinance 8A is on the agenda tonight for second reading. Communication 6I.
A June 3rd, 2024 memorandum from Health Director Kristen Wenrich. Ms. Wenrich advises that the city has received a $15,000 grant to purchase baby cribs for the Cribs for Kids program. The budget adjustment will be necessary because the 2024 general budget will increase by $15,000.
And ordinance 9A is on the agenda for first reading. Communication 6J.
An August 12, 2024 memorandum from DCED business manager Tiffany Wismer. Ms. Wismer advises that the city has received a $108,650 grant from the Pennsylvania DCED for a consultant to provide a comprehensive parks and recreation master plan for the city. The grant requires a 15% match, which will be funded by recreation fees of $16,298. A budget adjustment will be necessary because the 2024 non-utility capital budget fund budget will increase by $124,948.
And ordinance 9B is on the agenda for first reading. That concludes our communications. Moving on to reports, for President's report. I just want to briefly address some of the things that had come up during old business today as council was having discussions, things that I had spoke about at previous meetings that I'll reiterate. And I think I am repeating myself a little bit from the last meeting, but as it relates to council business, I'll never advocate that we should all get along but we should all be working in good faith with each other, and that when we as colleagues express ourselves to each other, I think it's also incumbent for all of us to listen to each other. And when one colleague shares a perspective, whether it's how, disagreement on a vote, which of course everyone has every right as a member of council to vote how they choose, and I shared that at the last council meeting that, the heart of Robert's rules is a majority rule, in that the majority wins the day when it comes to each agenda item and the vote, but minority rights, in that everyone is given the same universal rights as members of council. As it relates to members expressing themselves, I think it's incumbent for all of us to have a little bit of introspection also, and listen to what it is that our colleagues are sharing as it relates to how we, and I'm including myself as a speaker, as I've got feedback and at times criticism from members of council, and I try not to respond in defense, but rather try to be aware of how I am moderating these meetings. And that's fluid, that's always. That's the last meeting, that's the last year, that's tonight, that's in the future, as long as I am chosen to be the president of City Council. And again, when we talk about
kind of how the votes play out. I won't get into citing different votes that have been 5-2 or 4-3 or some things that failed with whether it be support of the administration or that, but then council voted it down. There have been instances of that. And I think that characterizing council meetings as a routine, the perception that we already know how these are going to go, I just think that's an unfair criticism. Of course, there are times that there are contentious votes and it's not unanimous approval, but that goes back to, again, the spirit of Robert's Rules, where the majority wins the day. And as we're talking about Robert's Rules, just the basic Robert's Rules of speakers should avoid interjecting personal matters into debate, should avoid making comments about another person, or avoid questioning motives. The simple reason for that is then it's left to, and I also encourage any debate here at Town Hall, but when we're injecting personal matters, when we're injecting personal opinions, when we're injecting things that are not occurring here in Town Hall, well then people are left to discern for themselves what is, what isn't. And I don't agree with that, and that's why, you know, Robert's Rules are the way they are. I think, again, I'll just speak for myself, as I've shared before, there are meetings where I'll reflect upon and go, maybe I could have done this different, I could have done that different. But what I don't want to have, whether last meeting tonight or future meetings, is this idea that it's this contentious relationship amongst members of council. We had, I would say, a very appropriate new business tonight. I always encourage all members of council, use your time, as every member has the right to ask questions. That being said, I don't have to continue on with my thoughts here on that there's a objective right way and objective wrong way to approach that. And as it relates to Robert's Rules, I ask everyone to continue trying to adhere by them as it relates to not addressing each other, making sure comments are addressed to either the chair or council as a whole, and really trying to, while expressing ourselves, whether in the minority or the majority, turning things into now these personal matters that I don't think are to the benefit of council business or to the benefit of anyone who comes here to listen to council business. And that starts with me enforcing, right, as council president. And I've said this before, I'll never claim to throw a perfect game up here any night, but always trying to do my best, and then with that, I expect everyone to also do their best. So, thank you for the members of council. And that concludes what I had to report this evening. I will turn to Mr. Evans for the mayor's report this evening. All right, easy enough. For our Public Safety Committee, Councilwoman Leone.
The Public Safety Committee will meet on Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024 in Town Hall. There is one agenda item to be reviewed involving the police department. One, police department's plan to curtail the illegal use of dirt bikes and ATVs on city roadways. Rachel Leon, Chairwoman, Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Councilwoman. So we're going to move on to our ordinance for final passage.
Excuse me. I don't know if we skipped over. I thought that the mayor's report had three administrative orders.
No. We can discuss after the meeting, Mr. Kaplan,
sure.
And see where the discrepancy might be.
Yeah.
But moving on to Ordinance 8A, Ms. Guba, please read Bill 25-2024.
Ordinance for second reading, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2024. Bill number 25-2024 is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? I'll just briefly turn to either Mr. Evans or Mr. Wright, who wants to give us, I know you emailed council an update, which we appreciated, but if we could just get an update kind of on the status of this before we take the final vote.
Certainly, we had 8 candidates left on the list, and we had one carryover from the last fire academy that had injured himself and has now rehabbed and is ready for employment again. We conducted background checks and interviews of the 8 remaining candidates on the list, and there were 7 that that were selected for employment, so that with the one carryover from the Allentown Academy that had injured himself is how we ended up with 8 candidates to send out to the Harrisburg Community College. They started their recruit academy out there Monday morning at 7:30, and they're currently doing their EMT medical studies.
And Chief, what's the timeline for them being assigned to platoons or actually being in uniform with the department?
Their graduation is January 10th,
okay,
and then they would be sworn in after that and assigned to platoons as soon as we could.
Understood. Thank you, Chief.
Can I ask a quick question?
Mr. Callahan, can you
let us know, there was a big fire on Broad Street on a historic house that, what's the story? What it just, did it burn down completely?
Was it? No, there was a second alarm fire. It went to a second alarm due to the temperatures at the time. We had some people that need to be employees that had to be evaluated by EMS, so they upgraded it to bring some extra personnel. But the fire was quickly contained and is under investigation by the fire marshal's office.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Just a financial comment to this memo. The original request was for $360,000. It's $40,000 per cadet. And this amendment proposal, we waited for the time that we said if it was less, we would ask request to reduce the request. It's being reduced to $320,000. So this is a $40,000 reduction in the request. We took 20 off of salaries, 12 from training, 8 from uniform and safety shoes, and minus 40. So the 320,000 would be at 40 times the 8 cadets.
Thank you for that background, Mr. Evans. Anything else from members of council? Ms. Cooper will call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan? Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Sorry. Ms. Cransey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to new ordinances. Please read Bill 27-2024.
New ordinance. An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2024. Bill number 27-2024 is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussions? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cransey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 7-0. Bill 28-2024.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2024 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 28-2024. Is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Any discussion on Bill 28? Ms. Kwiatek?
Mr. Cologne, thank you. I did have a question about within the description of project or scope of services to be provided. In the third bullet point, I don't know if perhaps Ms. Collins is the right person or I'm not sure. So it specifically says recommendations should include current and future funding sources that would achieve a profitable neighborhood park system concept. And so I'm wondering what if the word profitable, to me that raised some red flags. I think I've been pretty clear several times in the past that with regard to the pools, for instance, that we don't expect other parts of our budget to pay for itself or to turn a profit. So I'm just looking for a little bit more context, a little bit more explanation about why that particular word included in the project scope.
I could take a look at that. I will point out, I think you're referencing the memo that is associated with the resolution on approving the Parks and Rec master plan as opposed
to... I got ahead of myself.
The budget item, but they are, I mean, they are related, so I'm happy to answer that and or potentially turn it over to Mr. Alcohol.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will just consider this having been asked when we get to the agenda item that's specifically about the contract, and then that gives you maybe some time to think about that a bit. I apologize, I did kind of jump out ahead because this was a question that was going over, rolling around in my brain about the project itself, so.
Any other discussion regarding Bill 28? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Francie Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye, passes 7-0. Moving on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of the city-issued handgun assigned to Sergeant Chad Wasserman, a retired city police officer. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on the resolution? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Francie Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Resolution passes 6-1. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Herbert, Roland, and Grubeck, Inc. to provide engineering administrative services to replace a water reservoir in Lower Saucon Township. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on Resolution 10B.
I just have one question.
Councilwoman?
Thank you. Mr. Bosco, my only question is, how much is the H2O Pennsylvania grant? Do you know offhand?
$750,000.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion related to Resolution 10B? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Resolution 10B passed 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with AECOM to evaluate the aeration tank performance at the wastewater treatment plant and recommendations and design criteria for the next phase of improvements at the plant. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Any discussion on Resolution 10C? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Omnis Landscape Architecture Planning and Art to provide a comprehensive parks and recreation master plan. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on Resolution 10D. Ms. Kwiatek?
Is this the right place for my original question?
I believe so, Councilwoman.
Okay. If Ms. Francis Smith wants to ask.
You can go ahead. Since you're already started, go ahead.
It's just a question about the using the term profitable in the scope.
Yeah, I just hurriedly sat down next to Mr. Alcohol, and we both agreed that profitable in the sense of making money is not what this bullet point probably meant, just beneficial. So there's not an intent to make money off of the park system.
Thank you. I just didn't want to go into it with the expectation this master plan was going to have some kind of a cost structure associated with it that was expected to return more money than the park's cost. I don't think we should have that expectation. So I appreciate you clarifying what you see as the definition of that word within this. Thank you.
So profitable in the sense of beneficial, efficient, those sorts of things.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Ramsey Smith.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Collins, my only issue, which I brought up before, is I just want to make sure, and I'm wondering, I know on page 2 we talked about it being equitable and accessible options, but I'm wondering if this firm has any experience with inclusive and sensory-friendly playgrounds, because, again, I just think that's so vitally important, and I really request that we make that a really important part of this whole plan, because inclusive for those who have, physical and cognitive challenges, but especially sensory friendly for the increasing number of kids that have, they're on the spectrum and have sensory kind of processing issues.
Absolutely. Thank you for raising that in past conversations as well. So it was discussed, I believe, internally during the evaluation process and with each of the candidates. So my understanding is that this firm does have experience and is aware that that's of interest to us during this planning process.
Okay, great, thank you. Yeah, and I would just request that it really be a very important part of the process. And even if, whatever plan they develop, there are other entities out there that sell. I know Jodium has looked into some, some equipment that was accessible and inclusive and sensory friendly, so that we can definitely get that into the parks as necessary. Thank you.
Any other discussion on 10D?
Yes, please. This is
Councilwoman Laird.
Colleague there. Once this master plan is drafted, or during the process, would this be coming before the Parks and Rec Committee for review and input?
I would think it would, yes.
And would you anticipate that being at the end of the 10 to 12 month period?
I would have to check. So there's a variety of meetings built in to the schedule. There's, I think, 12 study committee meetings, 3 formal public meetings, 2 pop-ups, 10 to 20 key person interviews. So I'm not sure exactly where the Parks and Rec group would fall in there. And if you have suggestions, I think there's some flexibility as well that we could give to the consultants if you think it should be earlier or later in the process. We'd be happy to chat about that.
Okay, cool. And I'm glad to hear that there's so much public input being sought as part of the process.
Any other discussion on Resolution 10D? Thank you, Ms. Collins. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Celtic Fest, Inc., doing business as Celtic Cultural Alliance for the 2024 through 2026 Celtic Classic Highland Games and Festivals. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Lair?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. 10E passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller are authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for an emergency solutions grant through the State Department of Community and Economic Development on behalf of the Lehigh Valley's homelessness service providers, and that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute necessary agreements and documents. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on 10F. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller are authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a $1.8 million State Department of Community and Economic Development grant for West Broad Street renovations, and that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute necessary agreements and documents. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on the resolution? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10H.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem and the mayor and controller are authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a $695,339 State Department of Community and Economic Development grant for construction of sidewalks located in the North Side Alive neighborhood and the South Side Business District, and that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute necessary agreements and documents. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Lair?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. And Resolution 10I.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Pennsylvania Resolution, is hereby granted for 117 East 4th Street to finalize details and finish for a proposed new construction project that previously received certificates of appropriateness in November of 2021 and November of 2023. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion on the certificate of appropriateness. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Resolution 10I passes 7-0. Ask everyone bear with me for one moment as I have to clean something up procedurally. I'm going to make a motion that council reconsider Bill 25, 2024, which was agenda item 8A. A motion to reconsider is simply bringing it back up as if it had not previously been voted on. I'll elaborate in a moment. So I make the motion that we reconsider agenda item 8A.
So moved. Or is that second?
Second from Councilwoman Leon. Any discussion on the motion to reconsider? I'll simply say why. So as was read earlier by Ms. Buba and Mr. Evans had alluded to, and Chief Wright had mentioned, because we had eight cadets go to the academy instead of nine, we do have to amend 8A, and we never did that on the floor. We voted on it. So I will make a motion that council amend agenda item 8A, bill 25. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the motion right now is to reconsider. That is why I'm making the motion to reconsider. Any further discussion on the motion to reconsider? Bill 25 of
2013.
That's what we're doing, Mr. Shire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you make your
Mr. Shire, running a meeting here. So as we're on discussion on the motion and the second, right now we're on discussion to reconsider. So any other discussion on my motion to reconsider Bill 25? We'll call the roll on the motion to reconsider.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Willingham?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. So passes 7-0. We're now reconsidering agenda item 8A. Thank you. The purpose is, as I was saying, I got ahead of myself a minute ago, Mr. Evans had sent the memo, Ms. Buba had read it, Chief Reich had referenced that instead of sending nine members, cadets to the academy, we sent eight. So we have to amend Bill 25-2024 to reflect the appropriate adjustment. Any other discussion on it before I make my motion here to amend? So I make a motion to amend reconsidered Bill 25-2024, or agenda item 8A, if you want to reference your agenda, for section one to be amended to read that total appropriations in the 2024 general fund budget be increased from $113,684,955 to $114,004,955. And for section two, that the following allocations be changed for account title salaries to be changed to $8,743,016. For account title uniforms / safety shoes to be changed to $287,000. And for the account title training to be changed to $210,000. Followed by section three, that the source of revenue be changed from account title investment interest, where it currently reads to $1,160,000. To read $1,120,000. So that is my motion to amend to reflect the values and the language that I just read. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Leon. Any discussion on the motion to amend? Ms. Buba, please call the roll on the motion to amend the ordinance to that.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Willingham?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. So now the ordinance is amended. So now we're on discussion. A discussion on the ordinance as is amended. For the last time tonight, I'll ask Ms. Buva to call the roll for Bill 25 of 2024 as amended.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Willingham?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. So after reconsideration, Bill 25-2024 passed 7-0 as amended. Thank you, everyone. Tonight's meeting is adjourned. I thank
President
our.
Clump?
Yes.
President Clump?
Yes, Councilwoman.
Can I just make one important announcement during the new business? I just want to say that on social media there was discrepancy regarding the Christmas tree lighting, and it was stating that the Christmas tree lighting is on Sunday this year, and people were very confused. So I just want to state that publicly so people know. I'm assuming it's still on Friday. It usually is, unless someone from the administration can say differently, but I just wanted it to be publicly known that that was an error. I believe somebody must have falsely advertised it.
Mr. Alcohol?
Not someone from the city,
correct.
I think so.
Correct. No, it's Black Friday.
For reference, Mr. Alcohol is given the affirmative that it's still Black Friday this year.
Okay, great. I just wanted to confirm that. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you to our Deputy Clerk, Ms. Buva, for filling in tonight for Mr. Miller. Get home safely, everyone. Tonight's meeting is adjourned. Yeah, I completely missed us amending that. And as I'm sitting here, I'm texting Eric, like, darn it. I turn off the live report.
Actually, what happened? I could have swore that. No. But, like, why was there a meeting 2 weeks ago? It was supposed to be out. Oh, I misunderstood the whole thing. I thought it was moved a week later.
Whatever you do.
I misunderstood. Oh. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go home and watch. I'm so mad because I haven't missed one since I started coming. And I just find out one of these dramatic moments. Yeah, I will.
Yeah, it was just...